Once a champ, always a champ. We got Misha Tate in the house.
The champ
which is
here.
Really exciting to have
champ
you.
Is here.
Hey.
I got nervous. I always get nervous when we book. The most stressful thing is booking guests, because when you're not Joe Rogan, it's easy to cancel the small guys, the small shows. So thank you for doing that.
You shot me a text today, and I know it was kind of like to let me know you're still going to be there. And I was like, oh my God, I never responded. He probably thinks I'm totally.
I was nervous. Yeah, because the other night I said
like 12:30. I was like, let me at least give him a thumbs up. Let this calm your sweat glands a little bit.
Thank you. Yeah, I get nervous because we get excited for someone like you coming in. You know.
Thank you.
And Mark, first time in the
so
chair.
Happy to be here. Yeah,
man, stay close to that.
Okay.
So Mark is going to be the new host of Fight Junkies, which is exciting.
Yes.
This guy is a student of the game, Misha. It's crazy. He doesn't just know the UFC fighters. Like, he'll tell you about all the PFL fighters, all the belt, like everything.
We're headed there later.
It's crazy.
You know, people don't ask me, like, why don't you do, like, pre and post fight shows? I used to do that on Fox. And it was so much work for me because I don't have that kind of brain that remembers like the intricacy of people's styles. Because, like, I don't think people understand that you not only have to know this person's style and this person's style and this person's style, but how the styles would potentially mesh to be good at picks and predictions, which I do not claim to be.
Yeah.
Unless I really follow, like, my division.
Right.
I think I do a pretty good job of picks there. But I don't know if it's, like, that I don't have time, or I just don't care to be that good at it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's probably both. I just like watching fights. I prefer doing the fights personally. I think I'm more of like, you know, like I like to be in there doing it more than I am a fan. It's hard to be both, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, once you become the professional athlete, it's hard to become the fan to where you could tell somebody how to pick accurately.
Sure.
Right? Unless.
And what I really enjoy about it is it's a mix of both understanding how the styles match and then understanding what's the fighter's mindset. And what's their trajectory and where they're at in their career and their ways up and down. And even coming from being a professional poker player myself and the highs and the lows that have came with that, I've really found so much, even little solace in listening to interviews. I found motivation in listening to interviews. I've found an edge in listening to interviews and everything like that to really get in their head and understand. Because every fighter is going to say it was the best camp, and every fighter is going to say
always
they're ready. But there are little things you can pick up on if you pay enough attention, for sure.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think I was listening there's like a study done on lobsters, basically. And lobsters, like, if they're dominant, they continue to win. They change their whole, like, biology and the way that they live, the way that they carry their tails and everything. But once they lose, it kind of starts to, like, become a thing that, like, their bodies change and everything. And they just start to become more docile. And I was like, I wonder if that can happen, you know, with people, like when you lose a fight, because you see that sometimes, like a champ is so dominant. Like, take Valentina Shevchenko, for example.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody thought that she was going to lose to help me out.
Did she even lose? But
yeah, I know. Okay, well.
But yeah, I see what you're saying.
The first time
sure.
she got submitted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. That's
she
fair.
Got submitted.
That is true.
And then, so anyways, like the whole thought, like, behind, and then, like, a rematch, and does that get into the psyche? Like, where do you how do you figure that out?
And that's what Grasso deserves her credit. She did submit her. I was on the wrong side of that, but yes.
Yeah. So no, I know which one you're talking about, though. It was I know what fight you're talking about.
But they're setting up for the awesome trilogy.
Yeah, they just finished the Ultimate Fighter. They just wrapped that on the 9th, so they were coaching on that.
Yeah.
So.
Actually,
are you going tomorrow night? Are you going to the fight?
I'm doing a viewing party, a watch party.
Nice.
So I will not be there. I'll be at Blondie's at Planet Hollywood.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice,
so if you guys want to come by.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go to the fights, but.
All right. Well, that's you haven't bought tickets yet?
No. Maybe something last minute.
Are you waiting to scalp them?
I think so. And actually, shout out to my coach, Jason Andrada from Muay Thai. That was on Tough in Valentina's corner and team and stuff. So that'll be cool to watch when that comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. What when are you jumping back in, do you know?
Yeah, of course. That's
gosh, I would like to fight in August. It would either be August or September, because my sister's getting married.
Hold out for the
August
October.
I'm sorry. My sister's getting married in September.
Oh, wow.
So I'll either, like, have a camp before that and fight right before, and hopefully not have a black eye for the wedding photos. But, I mean, you know, it comes with the territory.
That's okay.
And if not, then I'll probably start the camp right after her wedding.
Are you happy to be back?
I'm stoked.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just had the most amazing wrestling practice this morning, and then went straight into strength and conditioning. So I'm just riding the high of that workout. You know?
Yeah.
They call it, like,
Extreme?
No, I did it at the UFC Performance Institute.
Nice.
So it was kind of all there, because I do my strength and conditioning there, and they have great mat space upstairs. But my coach, Kirk White, he's in from Boise right now. Oh, so cool. He's just driving through. He builds indoor playgrounds. I'm like, that's cool. Nice. But he got like a job in Arizona. So he's coming from Boise down. And he's like, I'll just stop by a couple days. And his wife is like the coolest. So it's just a good deal all around.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Travis, I just realized we have Mike 40 in the waiting room.
We do. Yeah, he joined
via
back.
Zoom? Yes. Okay. Mike, say hi to Misha Tate. Can she? Oh, there he is. All right, he's up there on the screen.
Oh, I can see him.
One of the things I wanted to talk about today, so Mike has a tax specialist company, and I wanted Travis, what is that sound?
I actually,
happening?
It's something glitching with
possessed in our.
Something's glitching with the.
Is it Zoom?
What is it?
Is
what
it
is
Zoom?
It?
It's like a horror movie.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's slightly creepy. I'm like, are we entering
creepy.
This episode of Saw right
I,
now?
I don't
did Bizarre Junkies take over the stream today? What's going
on? I don't
know.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, bear with us if that keeps happening. But I wanted to talk about you know, a lot of athletes, because you're 1099, have you had to deal with, or do you have any friends that had to deal with like serious tax problems because of the 1099, and not, it's hard to manage that money. When you get that money in one lump sum, right? It's like, I want to spend it. I want to use it.
So funny. I just met with a financial advisor yesterday. So I have one, and I'm talking to another one. And, you know, I like to invest my money in multiple ways because I feel like that's the only way that I'll have the checks and balances later when you're talking about, because we do. And I was telling him, I was like, you know, like 1 year, I made well over $1 million. And then, like, if I got injured and didn't fight for a year, I could make, like, less than 100,000. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
sure.
it could potentially, like, I'd have to do a lot of other things outside of the cage. But it could be, like, I could fight and make $300,000, and then I could fight 2 weeks later if I'm healthy and make another three, and it's a $600,000 year, you know? And then it's like, or you could be injured in that. So
yeah.
what you're talking about, when you get this big lump of some money, I always advise these fighters, like, get somebody who's smart with your money, who's smarter than you with your money.
Yeah.
And let, you know, let them invest parts of it, because you've got to make money for you.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mike, what are some of the things athletes you think need to be aware of?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, John, and hello, champ. Nice to meet you. I think the first thing is, you know, starting to cut that number in half right off the bat, right? So you talked about 300 here, 300 here. The truth of the matter is, like, only 60% of that money is actually the cash flow, right? There's
only 40% actually yours.
Tax burden, right? And, you know, it happens all the time with this rapid accumulation of wealth, where, especially in that type of a situation, $300,000 might have been 3 years of previous income. And now I've got that number and I want to go out, I want to go buy a car, I want to do these things with the money. So it's about, really, the first step is to understand the true value of that cash that's in the account. You know, as someone who's been a W-2 employee, there is a viscerally different feeling than reading a paycheck that says the government took this much, but you never got to see it. And you're like, oh, what are they doing with that money? Versus it being in your bank account and then sending in a quarterly payment, right? That's like, how do I deal
with
this?
The first one's like an uppercut, and the other one is like a gut punch that you just didn't see coming. You're like, oh, for real? I got to fork this over. I have to actually see it leave my bank account. It hurts. It definitely hurts. But not to jump in on that, I'm sure you have some great advice. But another thing is, like, start an LLC, and then you can pay yourself as an employee and other people as an employee too. And that's a great way to kind of offset some of your, like, the money that you'll have to give back, that
right.
40%.
Yeah. I don't know if you,
that's
Nick Roy.
Exactly right. So we do a lot of that corporation setup, right? Setting up an LLC, whether the income level determines whether or not you want to be an S corp or not, and making sure that you're protecting that wealth and finding a
it's
vehicle.
Growing on me, actually.
Right.
That sound. You
Are you
that?
Hearing
you
that
hear
sound,
that?
Mike?
You hear that too, Mike?
Do you hear that sound, Mike?
No, I'm.
It's definitely coming from the computer. Then, sorry about that.
I wonder if the fans hear it. They
where?
Have to hear it. If
I don't know.
Right.
Just 5 years in. It's just, it never fails. When we have the quote unquote the big guests, something always fucks with us every time.
It's
crazy.
It's something on the computer.
It's so crazy.
Let's power through this and then
sorry,
I'll
Sorry, Mike.
It.
Go ahead. Keep going, Mike.
Well, I think, you know, Misha hit on one of the first things to do as an individual who's earning income through various sources is setting up that LLC. Based on that income level, the S-Corp election is another thing that you'd want to consider. But I think the thing that is scary for a lot of people is we can give this advice, and people that are watching this might be saying, thanks, but I didn't do that 2 years ago. And now I didn't estimate that I had 60% of the 3,000. I spent it all. It's accumulating interest. It's accumulating penalties. I don't have another income source that's going to be able to help me overcome the fact that I've created this debt. What the heck am I going to do? And without an answer, people get paralyzed. And the scary thing about that paralyzation is the government is the single most powerful collection company in the country.
Yeah.
And they are going to get their money.
Student They're not as good as being accountable themselves as they are as collecting on other people.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Right. Very true.
Right? It's a bit of a racket. They're putting $80 billion into fixing something that's been an established organization. I'm sure there are plenty of businesses out there that would love an $80 billion infusion to try and fix your company, right?
It's crazy.
How wrong is something operating when it takes $80 billion to enhance it?
Mark, so I would imagine you relate to this conversation
I do, in a lot of ways.
So Mike, I didn't introduce you to Mark. Mark is a professional poker player, and he's going to be hosting Fight Junkies for us as well. But he's a very successful professional poker player. So you live this same issue, right, with the taxes and stuff?
For sure. Everything he's saying I can relate to. And the main thing is that the IRS can't fix shit because the money's broken, if you really want to talk about it. But I don't want to go down that whole rabbit hole. But yeah, as a professional poker player, sports bettor, definitely have to be aware of everything you're saying ahead of time and plan for everything.
Do you have a way? We talked about this a little bit earlier. Do you have a way where you're keeping track of your losses, right? Because the casino and the government has a control on your upside, right, where you're going to get documented on every one of those wins. But you just keep a card, make sure you're documenting some of that loss to go with it, so you have a true net number on your profession?
Yeah, absolutely. All the tournaments are all – you have receipts for all them, all the cash games, you have a journal. Same thing with sports and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Nick, you went from zero to hero in the business world in a short amount of time. Your company did what in its – peak like what, 19 million in a year in revenue? Or
so our third year in business, we did 19. Last year was our best year, we did 31.
Wow.
And some change this year, we're hoping to
Travis is gonna have a seizure back there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw this computer out
if this sound keeps happening.
I'm just gonna have to manually mute and unmute Mike.
All right.
I think I'm a better testament. I don't know about hero, but thank you though. I think I'm a good testament as to like the people you surround yourself with. My business partner, I'm like the spender. My business partner is, he'll walk around flip flops and shorts, which there's nothing wrong with, but he'll have millions in his account and you would just never know it. So the good thing for me is I had a good person in my corner that I know, I love, I trust, that was just like, hey, so now that we're making a little bit of money, like, you're not going to spend it because if it's up to you, you'll have four Ferraris in your driveway. So right. We'll just invest it. So I just got taught.
So you just settle for the one Ferrari.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But
this guy.
But yeah. I mean, we alluded to this earlier. I was taught like the basic fundamentals of just interest rates, investing, taxes, loopholes. I wouldn't say loopholes as a bad way, as a good way, right? I mean, certain things you invest in, you don't have to pay as much taxes on. So I got that education, so to speak, from my business partner when we first kind of started making money. Back in 2016, 2017.
Like before we ever graduated.
That's what we
high
talked
school.
About yeah. earlier.
Why don't they? It's yeah. crazy they don't teach that.
I
so.
Mean, how much stuff do we not use?
Pretty
you
much
know
all
time,
of it.
Yeah, like how much time I feel like I was wasted in school. Like,
especially now.
I'm not anti-education. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not anti-education. I'm just, I wish we were more efficient and proficient
right.
in yeah. it.
Give us
I
more useful stuff.
We more
need
useful
more
stuff.
Practical like items that we apply.
Yeah.
Daily applicable.
Absolutely.
So.
I'm looking to do something different with my kids. I'm going to take them out. Like, my daughter's in kindergarten this year, and she's in an academy. And it's good school, but I still just want better. I want more for her. So I'm going to put her in Apogee. Have you heard of that?
No.
No, it's but so you're cool. taking them to Whole Foods, so you're on the right path. Shout out. Yeah. I ran into her last week at Whole Foods before I knew we were doing
this. I'm teaching them
podcast,
how to shop very expensive. I better make some money, kids, because Whole Foods is, you leave there feeling a little bit like you got robbed.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I prioritize their health for sure. I think I have this, all these little, you know, sayings like you pay the farmer today or the pharmacist tomorrow. That's how I think. You know? Yeah. So yeah, I spend more money up front.
You should.
But I really believe that'll pay dividends later. You know, when people are getting sick and, you know, get diabetes and all these other health issues, you know, it's kind of like, well, it is like if you brought a botanist to your house and you had a tree that was like the leaves were turning yellow or brown or whatever, the plant doctor wouldn't go, well, let me prescribe you a can of green spray paint. That'll fix your problem. Right. You won't have brown leaves anymore. Yeah. That's how our modern medicine works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great
yeah.
analogy.
And it's just prescribe something to fix the problem, sure. like or fix the illusion of the problem right, but that doesn't actually fix the root. Yeah. So a botanist,
fix the root before you fix the fruit.
A botanist is going to test the soil and say, what's it deficient in? Right? That's health. You fix the soil, you fix the nutritional deficiency, the tree fixes itself. So I think, you know, but anyways.
We're getting into the Gary Brecka mindset.
I know, who's probably walking in here any minute now.
I'm a fan of Gary Brecka, but back to, what were we talking about right before that? I was like, we were at Whole Foods, and it was
educating,
expensive, and education.
Apogee, right.
Apogee. So Tim Kennedy is one of the founders in that.
Oh, Tim Kennedy, Tim Kennedy.
Tim Kennedy, the one, Tim Kennedy. So it's just, it's more about like Socratic discussion. They're opening one here in Henderson. So I'm going to put my daughter in that. Mm. And a little bit of a multi-age classroom, which I think when if we were in the wild, that's always kind of what I draw my analogy to. Like, what would you do in the wild? Because we think like we were way classroom. Domesticated. Like, I want to get a little wild again.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that my kids can think for themselves, that they're not in the like sit down, shut up, do what I say kind of model of school. Mm-hmm. Like, I want them to, when they're 18, they should know how to do their taxes. Not only taxes, but they should know how it works and have a basic understanding of how to manage money so they can go out and make money. And I think that kids that can think can learn. So I want to teach my kids to think. I don't want to program. I want to teach them to think for themselves. Right. And that's really what I feel like this this school is about.
Nice.
And so I'm excited that they're opening one. It's really that's tiny, cool. though. It's a little micro school. It's like going to be like 40 kids.
The mixed-age classroom sounds like a creative learning environment. It sounds like a good place.
Yeah, kids learn so much from kids older than them. I think it's a little bit of a handicap to stick five-year-olds with all five-year-olds because they don't.
I agree.
None of them are mature enough to really understand how to model or how to like share or how to, hey, let me see how, a different way. But you get a 7 year old in there, you know, or a few 7 year olds, and there may be some different exchanges. You know, granted, the kids are not little terrorists themselves. You know, like you kind of want them around, like, you know, good kids, I guess. But I think that's just a better way of thinking. I know that when we have like our niece in town, she's like 12 or 13. My daughter, she's 5, and she'll just like just stare at her and just the way she's brushing her
like
teeth.
In awe.
The way, you know, and she wants to be like her. Mm-hmm. And she gets around other kids that are like a little bit older than her. And like she's scared to climb at the UFC, which is right across the way here. They had like a big party and a big event, and they had this rock wall that was out there, and my daughter was just turned 5 and this little girl was 6. Ironically, the little girl's name is Misha. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, I never heard anybody else named that. But she was scared to climb this rock wall, and this the 6-year-old, who was super sweet, and they were hanging out the whole time, and they did the zip line. She just hoofed it up the wall, and my daughter was like, I'm going up the wall.
Yeah.
I'm going up. Like, and she went up the wall.
Yeah.
And that's really what it took, was just somebody close to her age that could inspire her to do something that she wasn't sure if she could do. And so I like the multi-age classroom. I think that's good.
My my neighbor followed me up a tree when I was a kid and actually fell out and broke her arm.
Wonderful. That's just wonderful.
But I was maybe like 12 and she was like maybe 9.
You were the terrible.
Yeah.
You were supposed to say.
Be reminded of that story.
Yeah. You were supposed to say, don't do that.
So shout out to Chelsea was her name, I believe.
Poor Chelsea.
Oh, poor Chelsea.
Yeah. It's all right. Yeah. It happens.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have kids, do you?
I do not. No kids. Yeah.
Yeah. You have one daughter.
Yep.
How old now?
I'm 13. I thought it was going to be a follow-up to it.
No. Well, there was.
There's an awkward pause.
Do you have to worry about dating yet? Not yet.
Oh, yeah. That started 13, in like sixth grade. The crushes.
It starts that young?
Well, I like the crushes and stuff.
I was a late bloomer.
The crushes started in like preschool.
Right, but nothing happens.
Yeah.
Well, no, but like the crushes start. Like my daughter is like 4 and she's like, I think I love him.
I was on the inactive list until I was 16. Nothing was happening
in my world until 16.
Yeah, the crushes started a couple years ago, but like the boyfriend's definitely starting now. They don't talk. They don't hang out. She doesn't have a boyfriend, but like the her friends at that age, like they don't talk to their boyfriends. They don't hang out, but they have boyfriends. It's right. Cool.
I think I asked some girl to marry me in first grade.
That's
my daughter. She's like, I think I'm going to marry him. Yeah. I'm like, all right, well, maybe someday.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. I'm going to burst her bubble at five.
Yeah. Did you follow like baseball at all? Have you seen this Shohei Ohtani stuff going on? Do you know who that is? So he plays for the Dodgers.
Tell me.
He signed $700 million contract.
Okay.
Are you aware of all this?
Is that the one where his like agent embezzled money?
Yes. So, Mike, are you up to date on this? Because I'm going to lead it back to you.
Yeah. Well, did you see the structure of it? It's about $2 million a year for the next 10 years. It's kind of like the old Bonilla contract, where there are years.
Bonilla.
So like, there are numbers in the tens of millions that don't come for 10, 15, 20 years.
So this guy,
he's only making $2 million a year for the next couple of years.
For the next 10.
For 10 years, right?
Wow.
But this is his active endorsement money revenue. So he's wise to keep that 50% cut, you know, narrow during the influx of cash, which is going to be during his endorsement and active playing days, and then push that deferred comp back out past where are people going to, what if he's a bust, right?
So in 10 years, he gets $68 million a year. So he signs a $70 million a year contract for 10 years, but he defers $68 million of it. So he's only getting $2 million a year for the next like 10 years. Then he gets $68 million a year, probably after he's retired in 10 years. $68 million. So that's one thing. So I'm curious about taxes on that. So how does that work if he – normally they get taxed in every city they play in, right?
Well,
he's deferring the taxes until he gets paid on it. So if he's not playing – in 12 years and he's still getting paid, he just deferred all those taxes in all those cities.
Right. So meaning if he moves to Vegas after 10 years when he retires, then he never pays any state tax on any of that money?
He shouldn't.
Right. And he's eliminating, I know it is for football. I assume it's the same for baseball. Every state you play a game in, you have to pay taxes in.
Right.
So that's a nightmare for an accountant, right?
So that goes away.
That all goes away.
If he's not playing.
Yeah.
How do you just defer, though, like say that you don't want it? Like, what does that exactly mean? I mean,
So it helps the team. So there's a salary cap.
They just don't actually pay him. The team holds the money.
The team holds the money. Okay. So then there's that piece of it, right? So now the team gets to make money with that money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they have more salary cap.
Right.
Spend,
so they probably don't really lose. They probably make it, probably comes out, they come out actually way ahead on this deal, right, Mike? Or am I nuts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the other thing, too, is there's a reason every athlete has a foundation. I mean, a foundation is a model where you get to put the money in there and defer and distribute it out as you see fit.
Oh.
So most of the foundations are the beneficiaries of these large contracts. So as soon as that money goes in there as a foundation, he could have a foundation that is getting paid $68 million a year and do tons of philanthropic work. And then that's also a way you see these surrounding circles, the posses, like you just appoint people as head of PR for your foundation at X amount of salary. It's a nonprofit, right? In the sense that it is not built as a business, that it has a charitable mission, and you stick employee costs in there, so you pay all those people tax free, and then the proceeds of that are, we talked about the government not knowing what to do with what left hand's doing, what the right hand's telling it not to, like these you get to pick where this money goes. When you're paying your taxes, you're sending that money to Washington and they're distributing it based on the congressional budgets. That's why every athlete has a foundation.
Right.
Smart.
So, okay, so that's the first headline with this guy, Shohei Ohtani. He's an incredible player.
Has anyone ever done that? Is that a thing? I've just never
It's a thing, but never to this level. So sometimes what they'll do is they'll defer like a portion of their salary, like $1 or $2 or $3 million.
Right.
Not $68 million a year for 10 years. Yeah, like, never heard of this. Okay, so that's part one. Now, a couple weeks ago, so he doesn't speak any English, from Japan, no English, right? So he's got an interpreter. So now the interpreter... that make headlines that there's a gambling thing going on and that this interpreter somehow lost $4.6 million or something like
that.
He
took $16 million.
Right. But the original headline was $4.6 million. Shohei Ohtani. And it was, so the question was like, was it Ohtani lost this money gambling? The interpreter? Is the interpreter taking the fall for the money? Like, how did Ohtani not notice $4.6 million was out of his account and that it went to paying off this bookie, this illegal bookie, whatever? Now they just did the feds did an investigation. It's $16 million over the last, like, 4 years. And the guy wants to cut a deal. The interpreter wants to cut a deal. So that's basically like an admission of guilt. Like, okay, I'm caught. But now this internet's still blowing up because people are saying, no, he's taking the fall for Ohtani. There's no way $16 million could leave your account and you not realize it.
Imagine deferring $68 million and then you get caught for sports gambling and then you don't get the $68 million. He's like betting on his own game. Right. And then he's like, oh, sorry, you don't get your $68 million.
Sorry, contract void.
Exactly.
Well, oh my God, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
They're setting him up for that. They're setting him up to void his contract.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the interpreter's getting paid on the back end from that.
But I've been arguing with people because I've used to own a PR firm and I've worked with athletes just on the PR management side of it. And I had a couple athletes. I 100% had complete control of their bank account to help them pay bills, to do whatever. Like, I was a signer on their account because they just couldn't get their shit together. So right. I would just make sure the car payments were paid, all this stuff. And I could have, if I was crooked, could have wreaked havoc on that. And they never would have known until eventually I'm sure it would have caught up. But it's actually very easy to do. I know people are saying, well, I'm talking about tens and maybe low hundreds of thousands of dollars. But it's still the same thing. You're either paying attention or you're not. And I don't think a guy like Ohtani is paying attention. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, Mike. Like, do you think Ohtani was in on that?
Where did that 16 originally come from? That might sound right. Maybe like a signing bonus order, because he's only getting paid $2 million a year.
So this is like he's on contract too. So he just signed with the Dodgers. So he made a ton of money with the Angels.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be easy.
Easy.
That would be easy to have happen. When you have like a ridiculous, and when you're not focused on money, people don't realize that because they're so focused on money. Like if you're like, you know, like a normal blue collar person, it's like, you got to make sure you got to manage your money all the time. Once you have so much, it's like, you don't even look at your bank account
like
anymore.
You're focused on fighting. He's focused on baseball. Baseball is every day
during the
season.
Yeah.
Pretty much. You get an off day every 8 days or whatever it is. You know what I mean? But like these guys are playing that season for 6 months, you know, 8 months with spring training. He's oblivious. And then also remember, he doesn't speak English. So now the interpreter has the trust, right? He gains the trust for over four years. Mm-hmm. And who are you going to verify when they're like, well, he would notice? I'm like, what do you mean? The bank is calling who? They can't talk to him. He doesn't speak English. So the bank's calling the interpreter. Interpreter's going, yeah, Shohei's right here. He said blah, blah, blah. What are you going to do? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah. I think you were going down the right direction of, like, champ, you know, when you're training, like, that is your focus. Your business is being the best at your skill. Your business is not managing your money or keeping an eye on the money. The money is a result of all of that training and focus. And if you skew your eyes over to that money, it's at a diminished factor against your focus on training and being the best. So I understand how these things could happen because of the fact that it is this accumulation of wealth did not come from financial literacy. Right. And coming up with a business plan and acquiring customers, efficiently processing those customers through a system to a net margin that makes people money. Look at those emojis. when your accumulation of wealth is through skill, talent, name, image, likeness, that is just who you are. The business skills and money management skills and the financial literacy, those don't come with the development of a business. Like they come as a result of it. And so this is why we see it with influencers too and sponsor deals. Any sort of accumulation of wealth that is just coming through that, either pure athletic skill, pure talent, if you're talking about the arts, right? Actors, actresses, writers, athleticism, that is their craft. Their craft is not handling finances. Right. So you can get taken advantage of, I believe, very easily through that trust network that you discussed.
Misha, did you? Sorry, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the most difficult part about that, when these things happen, is it 99.9% of times it's the person directly next to them,
mm-hmm, right?
Right. It's never somebody that is two circles away.
No,
that somehow.
It's the inner circle.
Bernie Kosar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Misha, have you, not to get all up in your business, but have you had any bad inner circle issues like on this highway?
So, yeah. I mean, of course, like I've lost my ass in taxes before just not knowing what mm-hmm. to do. And when you said like circle, you know, the right people around you, put the right people, but sometimes you think it's the right people.
Right. You don't know till you know.
Yeah, because you don't know how it's supposed to work. So you're just trusting. And a lot of times it's just a professional. You don't always have a relationship. And even if you do have a relationship with them, I mean, there's like family members that'll like slit your throat, you know, like you turn your back for a second. Yeah. So it's an interesting process. Like it was not quite as easy as like just trusting the right person, because you hear that all the time. Our embezzlement, people do it. It happens. So I think really vetting the person, like really trying to do your due diligence. But to Mike's point, it is so true. There's very different type of personalities of somebody who would be good with business management usually and numbers and money, and they're smart with that, and that's what they've made their passion in, versus an athlete who is going to be quite the opposite of that, almost more like an artist, a little bit more of a creative, 100%. Passionate, driven, who's not going to really make sense of all this. But all of a sudden they've got all this money. It's like you gotta just choose somebody to trust.
Yeah.
Like you could make mistakes in that, even if you're, you know, choosing your best friend or your mom or even well-meaning people.
And once you have trust, they can screw you over so fast. I mean, my father lost $8 to $10 million and didn't, you know, late in life. And, you know, my dad's Tony Orlando, the singer. I don't even know if you're old enough to know who that is, but he was famous back in the 70s. Ask your parents
when, like,
or grandma.
People ask me who I know anybody is. I'm like, I don't know anybody famous. And, don't ask me. Send me his Wikipedia or something.
My dad's business manager stole like $8 to $10 million over 12 years.
Oh, my God.
And she had power of attorney. Like, she was the godmother to my little sister. Like, he never would have imagined.
Never.
I told him
thought.
That she was crooked for years. It was like the only thing we used to argue about. I was like, this woman is I just knew, you know. And you know, he was already past the age of 50 and in entertainment, he has already had his hit records and everything. Like, you can't make that back at that point of a career like that. Like, it's impossible, you know. And
it sucks having to trust somebody else with your money.
Yeah,
but realistically, if you are talent, you're gonna have
you have to. That's an interesting thing, right, Mike? It's like You need people like you, but there's very few that are ethical like you. It's a compliment
to
you,
that's
Mike.
Right.
Yeah.
And Champ, you know, our corporate headquarters, I know you're a Washington State girl. We got a bunch of guys and gals watching up in Spokane right now at Priority Tax. And what they're doing all day is the aftermath, right? What we're talking about here is to try and be plan for these types of events. There are protections that can be in place. You talked about power of attorney. Who has those? How do you make them limited power of attorneys versus full power of attorney? And what are the line items that are associated with that power of attorney? These things all create messes that these guys, tax attorneys, enrolled agents, it's a specialty. So when you think about taxes, even you say, okay, I have a doctor, but now there's specialties. I have a podiatrist, I have an optometrist, I got a neurologist, right? When it comes to taxes, tax resolution and tax debt is its own specialty, because there's a series of programs and a way to work with the IRS that these guys are doing all day, every day on behalf of our clients. So we do a ton of CPA referrals on this client had so-and-so income that was going to a separate bank account because they didn't want their wife to see it. Well, that's fine, but the wife was in charge of talking to the CPA and accumulating all of the revenue and the expenses. This other account that was a slush fund accumulated a bunch of wealth, didn't have any taxes. Now you're getting audited on that, and there's a lien to come and collect.
And you're getting divorced.
Yeah, right. Well, we hear a lot of things on the phone where it's like, now this is my debt. I had no idea. We've been divorced a year. I had no idea these things were happening, right?
Yeah. Oh.
And we're navigating with that spouse. We're going back and having to pull return. Just non-filing is a huge problem, right? So a lot of times we're going back 3, 4, 5 years, or there's 1 year they missed. And it's really about just creating that path to compliance. And as long as the IRS knows you're on a path to compliance, that will allow you to protect the assets that you do have. When you're hiding, which is the fight or flight, right? When you're hiding, like because you don't have a path forward, that is accumulating penalties. Right now, it's accumulating 8% interest. And that, what is Ramsey, the debt snowball is rolling and growing while you are sitting there with your head in your hands going, I have no idea how to deal with it.
I did that, by the way.
That's what we're trying to do.
I did that, by the way. I was buried for a long time hiding because it gets so overwhelming. You don't even know. And I waited so long that they wouldn't even accept a payment plan because it had been so many years of non-filing. They were like, go fuck yourself. Like, So it was like, then you're caught. It's like, well, what do you do? Like, I can't come up with, cough up $150,000, satisfy you guys right now. So
did they like,
it was awful. It's a long story, but it got all cleaned up. But
did you end up owing the full amount or were you able to get it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Mike, because I came into the conversation late, are you a financial advisor? Are you CPA? What are you? What is your debt concern?
No, so I'm helping grow a business called Priority Tax Relief. So we're up in Spokane, and we're building a business focused on helping people with their tax debt. But the tax debt is a multi-technical tentacle problem that we're downstream from. So we hear about all of these things that happen. I did spend 15 years at Fidelity Investments. So I have a lot of training and 10,000 hours in that part of the world from a planning perspective. But to me, that coming up, meeting someone, coming up with a plan, sticking to the plan, those are easy things to do. What happens more often than not is you're the fixer, right? So how did I end up in this situation? It's because you didn't meet the right person to come up with the right plan and stick to that plan. Now we have to go back and say, okay, let's get compliant. Now let's get you set up right. We have so many people. I loved your comment right off the start of make sure you have an LLC. You know, we have so many people that come in that are running all this revenue directly into their Social Security number without an employee ID. And it's like, what are you doing, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
So we spend a lot of, we'll help with that part too. So once we get to, you know, from being underwater, then we get to a snorkel level, right? Where you're just seeing like, okay, there's a path to shore here, will help with that structuring of that path forward as well, because we have the tax attorneys on staff. So we can say, let's get this entity structure squared away. Who's your trusted circle? How are we going to set up a repayment plan that makes sense? You talk about the contract being deferred. If your situation today is blood from a stone, like there is a deferred plan with the IRS, you know, whether it's an installment agreement, or the fact that it's currently not collectible, there is forgiveness from the IRS based on these circumstances. The main thing they want you to do is just say, hey, I am in a tough spot. I know this happened, and I don't know how to get out. You call Priority Tax. Priority Tax gets on the phone with the IRS, and we start to come up with a solution. What is the alternative to that is I'm going to hide my head in my hands. I'm going to ignore it. Then I'm going to start getting letters. I'm going to ignore those letters maybe. Now they're going to start attaching to my property, my bank accounts. They're going to write
stuff, right?
Liens.
What is the not collectible? What is that?
So if you have economic hardship, if you have a medical condition that is preventing you from income, and there is not a path forward to being able to address this debt, there is a program that Priority Tax can help you get involved with, which is called a currently not collectible, that will let the IRS know the parameters of your specific case, how it aligns to the allowances of this currently not collectible program. And essentially what it does is it puts that debt, I always say, put it up on a shelf until you can address it. You have to remain compliant. So that debt is one that you do not have liability around collections on anymore. So if you have $100,000 and you get put into a currently not collectible, you are essentially saying, I've addressed this, but I can't pay it now. And if you stay compliant on your tax returns that satisfy the same story around not collectible, that lien actually falls off after 10 years. So there is potential to run through this based on a past revenue injection or income injection that is never going to happen again. Over 10 years, by the end of that, in a currently non-collectible status, you're going to end up owing nothing.
Oh.
Wow.
Interesting.
Mike, thank you for all of the tax wisdom. We're gonna let you go so Travis can reset that rig also and get rid of the horror movie sounds.
Oh, there it is.
That sound.
No, you're not
but,
hearing
it. Any last words for Misha from you?
Words for no.
Okay.
Pleasure to meet you. I love the. I will wedge in. I love the comment when you're talking about the care with your kids. I have two boys that are 10 and 14 and a 3-year-old daughter. And all of what I'm doing is about trying to provide a connection with them, right? Like, how do I make my time available for them? And when you talk about watching them in other peer groups, my most favorite thing to watch is my children's eyes. When I can see the difference between what their eyes are feeling and the words they're saying, and investigate that moment about how they're really feeling based on having a human connection. That's my favorite part of any day, right? I love the work we're doing. I love being able to help people. But when I get home, I just wanted to talk, like, I've seen some of your stuff online about, you know, how you want to empower your children. And so it's great stuff. Keep up the great work. You know, it's outside the octagon, but it's very, very valuable. I love it.
And I second that. I love that. My kids is like, they're just such cool little humans, you know, like they're just fun. And they let you see the world again for the first time because their experiences, or you get to live through their experiences. So it's so cool to be a parent. But I learned something yesterday, and since we're on the financial aspect of financial gain and preparation and all these other things, is that you could put your kids, if you can prove that they are part of your work. So, like, speaking about my children right now, and like this, like, I could put them on my payroll.
Yeah. Right.
You could put them in, like, your social media videos.
Another, Yeah, like they're on my social media.
They're on your marketing team.
My kids are not on my payroll, but they will be shortly. I just learned this yesterday. Yeah. So I thought it was valuable information.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, that is really... Yeah.
Travis is available to be on your payroll as well.
Yeah, I could be on your payroll.
Travis is available to be on your payroll.
I'm there.
All right, Mike, thank you.
He will be soon because I'm launching my podcast.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Mike, we'll check in with you later today. I'll text you once we get this back working. And Travis is going to reset that rig. But
all righty. I'm going to try my best.
You give your kids a salary of like 12 grand a year, and then it's obviously a complete write-up to your business. And they could be
taxes.
2 years old. And
it's such a small amount.
They could be marketing. I mean, and you just need to post one picture or video with them, with your company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or speak about them or use them in some promotion.
Yeah. Are you doing that with your daughter?
I'm going to because I just found that out too.
Yeah.
But my financial advisor does that with his – he's got like 4 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're all on payroll. And then he does his name's Adam Taylor. So his company is Taylor Financial.
Mm.
So on the website, he's got a picture of him and his family. Well, that counts. Like that's marketing. So.
I just feel like they don't talk enough with athletes. You know, when you're the Derek Jeters and the Michael Jordans and Tiger Woods and you're just murdering it and you're billionaire status, whatever, it's different, right? But it's like for most athletes, it's like I don't think they do a good enough job. Like I forgot the stat, but it's like something like in less than 2 or 3 years after retirement, like 80% are broke or whatever the fucking crazy stat is. Man. Like that's awful. It's awful.
Yeah, it's sad. But
it is sad.
To think, you know... have such a long body, a big body of work like that.
That's
you know.
Why I feel like the base, like a line of graduating high school should surely be understanding finance,
mm-hmm.
not just
right.
like geometry and algebra and like equations, but like literally how money works through the bank, through investments, through like all the, like, why do we not teach people that?
Yeah.
Why do you think?
I know why, because they don't want
they don't
you
want
to,
us
know.
To know.
Right.
They don't want you to know.
Real.
Right.
They if they keep, keep you small and keep you uneducated,
the
then they, you're easier to control, right? So
you
don't want a bunch of free thinkers running around this world.
But I do like how you're seeing a rise in even the MMA community of fighters trying to plan more for their future and understand that, hey, this isn't going to last forever and what's next.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really hard one to get through
like
any fighter's head,
I'm
that
sure.
this isn't going to last forever. Because it's like you're just like invincible.
What are you talking about? I'll be 50 and I'll fight.
Yeah. Well, look at Mike Tyson. Come on.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to box Jake Paul.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that fight?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, Mike Tyson he's phenomenal, but he's obviously slowed down a lot. So, I unfortunately think it will be a fairly competitive fight.
You do? I don't think so.
I don't think anyone talks about what I'm going to talk about is have you guys seen the rules to these fights?
It's like an exhibition.
Yeah, like
it's
no winners.
There's no judging. It's a money grab, right? This is going
to
be a money grab.
So, I mean, like, it's like, well, does that have a big deal? Like, that has everything to do with
it. But I think it's a money grab.
They're not allowed to get a knockout.
Right. But I think that's because I think Mike destroys Jake Paul. And I think even, I'm sure he slowed down since vintage Mike. I actually think Mike Tyson's still faster than Jake Paul. Jake Paul went the distance with Tommy Fury.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. There's no world where Jake Paul survives more than 1 minute with Mike Tyson,
there's no rules.
Right.
But there's like a rule that like I don't think either one could get knocked out for the first 3 rounds. Like that's like common with these influencer-ish fights. Like there's a whole laundry list of rules.
I mean, props
are they under the same
them.
Weight? I thought that Jake Paul doesn't have a weight.
I don't even know.
Yeah. So I'm saying,
I mean, props to them, make the money. Like, I'm all for Mike Tyson making some money.
I don't think Jake Paul is going to get anywhere near landing or hurting Mike. Not even close. But I don't think that I think he'll be able to be long and just stay out of the way and kind of be, I don't know.
Have good enough conditioning to like,
just, you know, youth a little bit of youth on his side.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, Tyson's a killer. I mean,
he's just
a licensed killer.
Savage.
We're going to have a surprise guest joining us on Zoom if Travis is ready.
But he's got that eye of the tiger.
Are you ready?
I got that eye of the tiger.
I got to bounce.
Okay, bounce.
Get out of here.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you,
Misha.
So much.
Thank you, guys. It was great.
Really appreciate you coming in.
Easy.
This was great.